April 15th here in the great United States of America, specifically from the broadcasting headquarters of The Talking Place, the home of the interviewer to the stars, Scott Spears, and also the home of your webmaster and fellow manager and radio person who sometimes invites controversy, dialogue, and lots of tickling of brain cells. I present to you myself, because the intern is off this week, Adam Lepp, the computer guy, and also the host of Mid-Morning Coffee Break. If you are still finishing up your taxes, hope you enjoyed that activity. Certainly taxes are always fun when I do mine, but you know, you kind of look forward to this day. And please take a break for the next 47 minutes or so. We're going to talk about current topics, presidential, political history, other things related to this great country we live in. And I think after you, we finish talking, well, you can keep listening to the radio, but if you want to continue with your taxes, that's fine too. It's kind of a ritual we Americans do on or around this exact date. I present to you my partner in crime here, so to speak, on this show, as we often present, Dr. Ron L. Fineman from Florida. Going to talk about some events happening, things that may be occurring in the near future, and again, who has thrown his or her hat in the ring for the presidential hopefulness, I guess that's a word, in the last few days, because it seems like every day there's somebody new. So, Ron, how are you doing on this fine Monday morning in the great United States?
I'm doing great. It's very nice weather here. It's not hot, but it's just definitely a good spring here.
We're going to get to some notable events occurring, and this is more of a lighter topic. Then, of course, we'll delve into the more controversial topics, but that's part of the fun here. I noticed when I was doing my taxes, Ron, there was a tremendous increase in the standard deduction. It has gone up to $12,000, when I could have sworn it was like two-thirds of that over the last couple of years. And in fact, it was so high that it was actually easier for me and more economical to use the standard deduction than deduct my mortgage interest. And I think a lot of homeowners have that same situation. I imagine you noticed that also, Ron. Do you have any thoughts about this rather large jump in the standard deduction that we can maybe share with your opinions with our friends here who are still doing their taxes?
Yes. Well, I found that the standard deduction made more sense for me now instead of itemized deductions. Yes. And I actually got a very large amount of money coming back to me, and usually I pay money in, and yet I hear many people are discovering the opposite, that they're having to pay in rather than getting a refund, and I'm not sure what their circumstances are, but it does seem as if a lot of struggling people who counted on a nice big refund are getting it. But I thought I was going to have to pay, even more, but I ended up getting a nice big refund. So I don't know taxes well enough to understand each person's circumstances, but a lot of people seem to be very upset, particularly in the Midwest, I've heard, and in the South, the white working class, that they seem to feel they're being, mistreated, apparently, from what I read in the papers. And yet other people are getting refunds, so I don't know what to say. I don't know enough about the subject.
I've never seen such a jump in the standard deduction when I was doing my taxes, and I use TurboTax. It's a wonderful program if you are self-employed.
Yes, I did too, yeah.
Yeah, it actually makes doing taxes fun. I hate to admit it, I actually enjoy using it. And we're glad when it's over and you can move forward, because it's like, to me, Ron, I mean, here in the Midwest where we have four seasons, April is really a transition month where it starts, okay, it's kind of cold, but there's always a 70-degree day. Earlier last week, we had temperatures in the low 80s in some areas. It was just over 80.
Wow, like a Boca Raton.
Yeah, and it sometimes snows occasionally as late as early May, but frost till maybe the second week of May, depending upon the area. But certainly winter has lost its grip and continues to do so. And April is a bit of a rite of passage, whereas April continues, you start mowing the lawn, you're planting the flowers, frost becomes more uncommon. So it's this transition into the warmer weather and our four seasons, which you don't. Yeah, I mean, you have seasons in Florida, but not quite like we have here. And then, June 1st is my birthday, so it's like May. It's a countdown to my next milestone, and I would say a slight milestone coming up for me on June 1st, but that's okay. I don't get older. I get better. not to mention better looking, but that's...
Yeah, well, as they say, when you reach the year 5 or 0, it's a landmark, you know, in any age. You know, otherwise, there's no big deal, but when it's 5 or 0, it's something else, yes.
Yeah, and I would say that, well, you have one of those coming up, and my next one also.
Oh, my, I do too. Later in December, I'm going to reach a 5. I wish I was your 5.
Yeah, well, again, you know, as long as you seem more youthful, that's fine, because, you know... I can't say anybody's ever guessed my age to be really anything close to what it actually is, and let's hope it stays that way. And if not, well,
I wanted to ask you: are you getting a tax refund? You know, because of what you do, as I am. Are you getting one, or are you paying in?
I'm about even because I pay estimated taxes and the estimated what I think I'll make, but I didn't account for this increase in my deduction as again $12,000. My house isn't fancy enough to deduct enough mortgage interest that I would actually be over that with itemized deductions. It's like, well, I haven't taken the standard deduction since I had a regular paycheck type job, where that was my I've had paycheck jobs combined with self-employment, but I haven't been 100% paycheck job literally since, well, actually about mid-90s. I was still doing some 1099 work at the time, but it was the large chunk of my income. So you're talking almost 25 years. And of course, as you probably know, Ron, it's called Form 1040 because 1040 was the original standard deduction. And of course, it's now almost 12 times that. And of course, with inflation, et cetera, things have changed. But I just thought $12,000, I'm not sure how I feel about it, but it'll certainly generate dialogue. And we get back to Donald Trump and the tax changes. And you're saying, and you don't want to give any credit to Donald, so you're appending that by saying you have friends who end up getting smaller refunds or paying, but it helped you out that you're actually getting a refund and a rather significant one. Which I'm
stunned by it, actually. I don't know how it happened, but of course I'm not going to give it back.
Yeah, but I mean, I think you would agree as I do. Maybe not to the extent that I do, but anything that occurs again in the country, we give at least indirect credit to the president. And so again, I would certainly give indirect credit or criticism to the president for this change in the taxes. I don't know how I feel. The standard deduction makes things easier. And taxes, just they get more taxing, so to speak, pun intended, more complicated. And we like to keep things simple. So by having more people being able to take this $12,000, it does make it simpler. And it's like, well, I'm being put in the same class as someone with a nicer house who pays more interest, who might still get a standard deduction. So I don't know. I would probably lean towards saying I'm in favor of it, but I'm wondering how it does affect some other people. But, you know, that's...
Well, I think it's one of these cases of six or one, half a dozen of the other. You can argue both sides, and a lot of people apparently are angry, at least according to what I've been reading. So they seem to be upset and those people are blaming Trump and the Republicans because the wealthy got massive tax cuts, and some of these people counted on this check in April or May coming back to help them through the year, which means they have troubles all year. Now suddenly have to pay out thousands in some cases, for what I'm reading. Oh, that's disturbing for them. I understand that.
Yeah, in your case, we're allowed to be a little selfish as Americans. I mean, and look out for number one. And something tells me, Ron, you'll never admit it, but you're secretly saying, thank you, Donald, for receiving this little refund, this little present from the IRS.
No, I don't think I'll go that far to say thank you. I might just say it's nice that it happened, but I'm not going to give him credit because actually the Republican Party passed it. But, you know, I still worry that we have a society in which a small percentage are gaining most of the money, most of the wealth, and the average person, white, minority, or whatever, is being squeezed further. It's still a reality in America.
Right. Well,
so it's very disturbing.
We'll be discussing it and debating it till the end of time, as I see it.
Yes.
So, but since you got such a big refund, Ron, if you'd like to send me a birthday present, that's fine. Yeah, you know where I live, and again, June 1st, I'll be happy to receive any presents from you or anybody else whom Uncle Sam may have been generous to, or Uncle Donald, whichever you want to refer to him as. Well, let's go back.
Uncle Sam is better than Uncle Donald.
let's go back in time, and we're speaking with the progressive professor, author of the blog theprogressiveprofessor.com, Dr. Ron Fineman, on this Income Tax Day, April 15th. Again, kind of a rite of passage. It's a transition, especially in areas like the Midwest, where we have four definite seasons and passage into spring, my birthday coming up in a month and a half, and taxes being over, and life kind of goes on. Busy day for people who are accountants, certainly, and that's good. You know, every job has seasonable seasonal ups and downs. And so my friends out there who are accountants, go ahead and get yourself a cold one tomorrow, because you certainly deserve it. So on this blog, Ron, that you author, theprogressiveprofessor.com, you sometimes talk about politics just from a historical standpoint and without interjecting any political commentary. Sometimes you take your well-known slant to the left on opinions of things that are occurring, and sometimes you leave thoughts up to the person who is reading it. And we have made jokes that Donald Trump doesn't really have the best reading skills, but some presidents do. It's okay, as long as you can communicate, and we can, of course, spend a whole day talking about that one. One of the best, I think people would agree, communicators among presidents was Richard Milhouse Nixon, also known as Tricky Dicky, and favorite president of mine, and it's kind of hard to believe, Ron, but coming up in just a few days, we will commemorate the 25th.
Monday, April 22nd. Right, next show, yeah.
Yeah, 25th anniversary of his passing, exactly 1 week from today, and kind of hard to imagine. I remember when it happened, and, you know, maybe I'm just old, but it's amazing it's been that long, a quarter of a century since we lost President Nixon. And, you know, we often make parallels. Nixon was considered a genius in foreign policy. He was very good for the environment, had that presence, that presidential presence, that you knew he was the president. And we may not have that with our current president. That's up for debate. But one thing that's come up, Ron, as you and I have talked about and you've blogged about, is there's corruption, obviously, in the Donald administration. And there was corruption in the Tricky Dicky administration, but it would seem like...
also in Warren G. Harding and Ulysses S. Grant, yes.
It would seem like the corruption in Nixon's administration can't hold a candle to the amount of corruption in the Trump administration. And as we've said, that kind of makes Nixon look better, doesn't it? And we also concentrate on the good things about him, like the EPA and, again, his foreign policy expertise and all that good stuff.
Yes, also, I always point out to students and to when I speak that he also signed into law. He may not have promoted originally, but he went along with the Democratic-controlled Congress, and he signed into law the Consumer Product Safety Commission, Occupational Safety and Health Administration about labor conditions, also National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and these are all things that Trump is trying to cut back on or destroy. So he's actually warring on Nixon's good things that he did, and even in foreign affairs. So that's why it's a tremendous difference between Nixon with his faults and Trump, and Nixon definitely shines much greater than Trump by far.
So President Nixon is up there in presidential heaven thanking us for commemorating the silver anniversary of his passing, but also saying, well, what is Donald doing to my great work? And kind of also saying, yeah, kind of snickering, well, you know, Donald's making me look a lot better. So he has that sly grin.
Yes.
Kind of wondering.
Yes, and I want to point out that Earth Day was created under Richard Nixon. He declared Earth Day. Of course, others were involved in that, like Senator Gaylord Nelson, a Wisconsin Democrat. But Nixon made it a national thing, Earth Day, April 22, 1970. And he died on that day, Earth Day, in 1994. So first you would say 24 years later, yes, but the actual declaration is 70. If you figure 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, it's actually the 25th time we had Earth Day, even though it's 24 years to the day, but it's the 25th declaration of Earth Day on the day that Nixon died. So he returned to the Earth on Earth Day, and I tell students that, and they chuckle when I make that point, because he started it, and he died on Earth Day.
One of the most interesting points about Nixon, kind of a quirky fact, is he always wore a coat and tie. It doesn't matter what the temperature was. If he was just sitting around, other people would just wear their bathrobe and slippers, if even that much. You know, I could talk about what I wear when I just hang around the house, and it's often less than a bathrobe and slippers. I don't even have any slippers, but Nixon would wear a coat and tie.
Gotta be careful because you could bang your toes. You should have slippers.
Yeah, it's well, it's tough to be careful. But anyway, Nixon would. I think he just wore it to bed. I mean, he was extremely formally dressed. And this is kind of a quirky fact about the guy. He was never photographed wearing any casual clothes. And again, Donald Trump always seems to be photographed with his tie, but Obama was a good case in point. He'd wear a tie. He'd wear shorts and sandals, or he'd just kind of wear jeans. And I guess that was kind of cool about the guy. He always kind of dressed for the occasion.
And also, Obama dressed in a tan suit and was attacked by a Fox News channel.
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes you like to just find some way to say something bad. And again, it's not a big deal. It's just interesting the manners of dress of these presidents. And Nixon, I just remember, I always thought the president always wore a tie. I remember watching some of the debates where the candidates had an open collar without a tie. And it's like, well, and Nixon was just so different in that regard. And I guess it's just the way that he treated the office. He felt that it was a suit and tie job.
Some would say he was uptight because he was always dressed. That's how some people would look at it.
Yeah,
it's critical.
He, as a personality, he just had that presidential attitude about him. And I kind of judge others by that. I'm not saying it's wrong to do it a different way, but it's an interesting case in point.
When you think about it, Trump always is in a suit, too, isn't he? I don't think I've ever seen him as president not in a suit, except he wears a long red tie that's too long. He doesn't have it at the proper, at proper ends. He has a much too long tie, but he always wears a suit, if you think about it. Have you ever seen him casual? Except maybe when he's golfing.
Well, I've seen him, in a golf shirt. But Nixon, I think he wore a suit to bed. I don't know. The whole thing is kind of interesting. So, interesting.
We'll have to find out from Pat, but she's not here to tell us.
But I would say of all the recent presidents, Obama is the one with the most diverse dress. Again, I've seen him at everything from the Bermuda shorts type attire to the suit and tie to kind of the business casual. And Michelle also, as there were certainly comments about her sleeveless dresses and other apparel. And the whole thing, although it's something to giggle about, it really isn't that important. But certainly Obama does get high points, even from people like myself who certainly aren't fans, but he gets high points as coming across as a regular guy who happens to be president and can be as presidential as needed when necessary. And that I think that's important. And Trump has that problem.
Yeah, at one point, Obama was also criticized for putting his feet up on the desk in the Oval Office. Some people thought that was unpresidential, but I don't think it's a big deal. Some people didn't like it either.
I don't think it's a too big of a deal. I think we can let him off easy on that one. But yeah, Nixon, I guess, kind of uptight. But just the personalities and mannerisms of these people as men is something to study about. And we've talked about it. And Ron is the official presidentologist, something I'm sure that you also take an interest in. So just a case in point. Why don't you share with our listeners two other presidents two of the presidents who are often considered to be two of our greatest, and anniversaries of their deaths that are coming up this month.
Yeah, Franklin D. Roosevelt passed away a few days ago, April 12th, 1945. World War II was not over yet. Truman had to come in and deal with the last few months of the war. And as I tell students, people at the time, I'm sure, must have said, why did you have to die just now? Wait till the war ends. But we don't have control over when we die. And, of course, Abraham Lincoln was shot and mortally wounded on April 14th, 1865, which was Good Friday, and died on Saturday, April 15th, which now is today, Monday. So today's the day of Lincoln's death, and that transformed the country because we got really close to the worst president ever, Andrew Johnson.
So some milestones in presidential history coming up, Lincoln, Nixon, FDR, certainly three of the presidents that we can all form an opinion of and take a look back and celebrate their great legacy.
May I add one other president, the one who had the shortest term, William Henry Harrison, after being inaugurated March 4th, 1841, and giving the longest inaugural speech in history with a pouring rain and cold weather, got pneumonia and died on April 4th, a month later exactly, 1841. So he's also an April death, but only 1 month in office. So actually there's four presidents who died in April.
So on your blog, Ron, theprogressiveprofessor.com, where you talk about issues, sometimes controversial ones that might cause people to swear at their monitor or might say, well, this guy is rather smart. Well, that's part of what we want. Dialogue, good and bad and different. We talked last week about Pete Buttigieg. That's the official pronunciation we're going to use. And, of course, he becoming a bit of a sensation, who might become our next president, our first openly gay president, our first president married to the same sex, and our youngest president, should he succeed in that office. So we'll see. But one thing he did mention, which you and I weren't overly comfortable with, was should we make financial reparations to descendants of slaves? He's only considering that, not saying he would want to do it, but I don't think that's a good idea, and neither do you. You mentioned last week that you were going to write about it in your blog, and sure enough, you did, on the 12th of April, which I believe was last Friday, where you're making parallels and is saying, is it apples to apples or apples to oranges? And you're saying it's apples to oranges. In 1988, the American government formally apologized to the Japanese-American community for the mass internment of over 100,000 people of Japanese ethnicity, and 50,000 survivors were compensated with a $20,000 check, but no payment was made to the offspring. Now, we're talking about people who are multiple generations past people who were slaves, and should they receive financial compensation? Well, I don't believe that they should. We can say we're sorry. We are sorry, but we need to move forward. You mentioned that when the slaves were freed, and this is appropriate with Lincoln's passing being celebrated today, in fact, that when the slaves were freed, an attempt was made to provide 40 acres and a mule for every black family after the Civil War, but it never really got off the ground. So at that point, it was different, as people who had been working but not been paid, not to mention they were being abused and being sold like they were cattle, providing reparations. But 150 years later, is it the right thing to do for their descendants? And you and I concur on this. We're not saying that we're not sorry, that we need to look at that as a lesson and move forward. And of course, as tends to be the case, hindsight is 20/20. But mailing a check to people who are multiple generations past slaves—that's not a viable idea. Plus, as you mentioned, fraud is possible, and I agree with that. So, not much to say, Ron. There, we agree, right? Anything you want to add besides my few minutes that I just talked about?
Well, also, I'll point out that the problem is if you started to do this, you could have a case for people from Hispanic ancestry and Irish ancestry and Jewish ancestry and Italian and every other group that would demand the same. And there's no way the U.S. government could implement such a compensation plan and not alienate those groups that would feel they're being blamed and assessed for something they had no role in bringing. In other words, you and I did not bring about this situation 150 years ago. Nobody else did. So it just could not work out because you would never stop. And we would not have the means financially to do that. But I did say economic opportunity and new civil rights enforcement should be provided. But the idea of compensation and sense of funds, no. But on the other hand, I think we should consider for those who have been in prison for long periods for marijuana drug convictions, and those in prison for years on the basis of failure to provide for a fair trial, those people, when they're released, should be given some kind of small compensation.
Right.
But that's not the same, you know.
It's an apples to oranges comparison. And in this case, it's not something which would be a good idea. And we want to set a precedent, as you said. Whom do we provide compensation to? We were talking online. I said, well, when I was in school, the really smart kids, they didn't get a good education. They were often ostracized. Teachers didn't care. Teachers would make fun of us as much as students would. And I felt that I would definitely say that not only did it affect me in a negative manner. I mean, I've recovered, and I think it's made me stronger. But my parents pay taxes on their homes, like I pay taxes on my home now. And how are those taxes used if the education they were paying for wasn't one that was good? Should I get compensation? And my answer is no. I don't deserve one nickel. And
yeah,
there's also an expression that says, "What doesn't kill you makes you stronger." And I'm definitely a believer
true.
In that. It's not a perfect parallel, but I think there are similarities, as I think almost everybody in this country, Ron, could find a reason to feel that the government owes him or her financial compensation. And yes, and theoretically that is possible, but I don't think that that's reasonable by any means. There are some blatant cases, like with the Japanese Americans, and people who had been slaves 150 or more years ago. But this is not the same thing. And doesn't mean that we're not sorry, that we don't feel guilty about it, but we have to move on.
Yeah, I have to say that with the Japanese Americans, we did the right thing for those who survived. But if we had added to now, to today, another, 20, 30 years later, I'm sure the number that were in the camps in World War II is probably a very small number. And in about 20 more years, there'll be none. So if we were doing this in 2040, there would be no reason to compensate future Japanese Americans, because none of them would have been in the camps in 1942 to 1942.
I think you'd agree, Ron, almost anybody in this country could find a reason to say, well, I think the government owes me money for these reasons. And my reason that I brought up is valid, but I don't deserve a nickel for that. I said
No, it's like Holocaust survivors who still get paid by Germany. They're dying out very rapidly now. Their children, grandchildren who were not in the Holocaust don't get paid and will not get paid. Only the survivors, and there are very few of them now, who are still compensated by Germany, but it's not going to go into future generations, no.
Right. It is different, and I don't see it as being too gray of an area. I think it's pretty obvious. Now, if I see Buttigieg pursuing the idea of providing these reparations, it's not going to disqualify him as someone I would vote for, but I wouldn't be happy about it. As I've mentioned, there are things that a candidate might stand for or say or associate with that would cause me to never to vote for him or her. This wouldn't put Buttigieg in a never, but I wouldn't be happy about it, and I might be looking at somebody else. So
I wanted to mention, I also wrote last week about three Midwestern Democrats now compete for the working class vote in the Midwest. Not only Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg, but also Tim Ryan from Youngstown, Ohio, Congressman Tim Ryan, who's a moderate who entered the race. And I'm curious if you have any thought on him, since he's from your state. Any thoughts you have on
Ryan? Well, he replaced
Tim Ryan.
Right. He replaced Mr. Traficant, who is known for both his interesting head of hair, which wasn't, of course, something that actually was growing out of his scalp, as we kind of know, and his imprisonment and being a corrupt person. So that district is one that certainly has been the topic of many discussions. I don't know that much about Mr. Ryan, but it seems like he might be a viable candidate. He just needs more recognition. Klobuchar is very well known, and Buttigieg, he's interesting. He's very intelligent. He has wonderful qualifications. I need to see exactly where his stands are on some of these issues. And the stand we just talked about is not one where I agree. And hopefully I will find many that I do, as I wouldn't mind voting for the guy, but he's going to have to earn my vote. Every person with me goes under the microscope. And I don't
I want to say Tim Ryan is most noted for having challenged Nancy Pelosi to be the Speaker of the House and losing. So he's been a critic of Nancy Pelosi. He's the moderate censor, and he thought there was a need for a new generation, and he's only 45. So he was saying it's time for Nancy to leave. And so therefore, I don't think Nancy has a lot of love for Tim Ryan.
Well, I think the reason he didn't make it was Donald would get confused because the Speaker's name would still be Ryan, and he would be wondering if it was actually still Paul Ryan. And
They're only about 4 or 5 years apart, Ohio, the other one, of course, Paul Ryan from Wisconsin.
Yeah, they're both about the same age, so that is kind of interesting. I wonder if that was the reason that Donald would just get confused over which Mr. Ryan was the Speaker.
Well, you think about the Midwest, is we have Buttigieg, who right now is 37, he'd be 39. You have Ryan, who's 45, would be 47. And Klobuchar, who's 58, would be 60. So they're in that younger range from 39 at the time of the oath to 60. 39, 40, 47, and 60, which is probably where the vote is moving, to move toward people of that age range rather than older. I have a feeling it's happening.
So let's stick to the Buckeye State. And there are two issues Ron and I will talk about as we, 14 minutes left of the show. It always seems to fly by. One we definitely agree on, and one we, I would say, agree slightly to partially on, but in general, probably don't agree. But we want to talk about it from a historical and precedent perspective. Anyway, the first one where he and I agree is the heartbeat bill, which seems to have become law here in the state of Ohio. We thought that it wasn't going to happen, but with Governor DeWine, it was reintroduced, and he just signed it. And this is a controversial topic, but we're not afraid to talk about that in the show, and we invite listeners, if you don't agree with us, that's fine. Send an email. It is, or call Scott, or call me when I'm taking phone calls. We want to invite dialogue, and on this show, all opinions are respected and appreciated and acknowledged. So on the heartbeat bill, Ron, again, we want to again mention, it doesn't mean that, because we're against it, doesn't mean that we are pro-abortion. We are pro-choice. We understand
Correct.
That a woman's body is a decision between her, her doctor, her faith, the father, etc. And out of lack of a better way to say it, I don't always have good analogies, so I'll just use the same one that other people use. Old white guys shouldn't be deciding what a woman does with her body. That's a woman's decision. Not saying that abortion is a form of birth control or that we like the idea, but sometimes, oftentimes in this life, difficult decisions must be made. And telling a woman that she cannot have an abortion after approximately 13 weeks when the fetal heartbeat is detected is not cool. And it goes against...
Well, I think it's 5 to 6 weeks, the bill, actually. It's that early, they would say. Yeah. But certainly by 13, yes. And I think that's crazy, really.
And in my opinion, that's not something that goes with the fabric of this great country. And again, I made no secret, I'm not a fan of DeWine. I respect his long period of service to the state and to the country. But he needs to butt out of this. And again, he's an old white guy, and he had no business signing that bill. And if that causes people to be upset, I'm sorry. I feel very strongly about this.
Vito did last year, which makes him look better, I think.
Not just an ethical issue, it's a financial one, because forcing women to give birth to a child can be very financially draining, and that shouldn't be the case. Again, I want to say it again, as it's important. It doesn't mean that we are in favor of aborting a fetus. We're saying that a decision must be made, which is difficult. And an abortion, you know, there really aren't a lot of winners. It's a unfortunate thing to do. But again,
John Kasich really showed courage when he vetoed it last term.
It's a decision that should be made by the woman, again, in consultation with her spiritual colleagues, obviously the father, her physician, etc. And it just aggravates me that Ohio is setting a precedent, and we now have what appears to be one of the strictest anti-choice, and I'll use that term because that's what it is, anti-choice laws in this country. And what's that going to...
Even more than Ohio, Texas is in process of passing an anti-abortion law that allows no exceptions at all, even rape or incest, and immediately upon sexual intercourse, not even 5 or 6 weeks. And I think that's really crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that would mean that the morning after pill would be illegal.
The Texas law, if they pass it, yes.
I'm fuming when I hear about this stuff. And the death penalty.
That's right. In Texas, they want to have the death penalty for any woman who has an abortion as well as her doctor. Death penalty. And that's extreme, yes.
You kind of wonder what's happening in this country, Ron, and that's why we're so polarized. We just have some extremes going on. And, you know, with me, I guess, lightening up the topic a bit, interesting in that I might sound far right on some issues, I might sound far left on some issues, but that's kind of how I am. I'm a true independent. But this case, Ron, I don't see this as being far left. I'm a human being, and that's what I am first. And as a human being, this disgusts me. And I'm sorry if any listeners find that comment to be inappropriate. I'm sorry. This isn't cool.
And it's a religious impact. We're allowing religion to get into politics and government, particularly far right.
I thought the reason,
I don't like that.
One of the reasons for the Revolutionary War was separation of church and state. And do we really have separation of church and state? Well, we really don't. We have partial separation, but I don't think that God would be happy with this legislation. God understands that people are human. People make mistakes. And shoving something down someone's throat, especially when you're an entirely different demographic. Again, an old white guy, that's what DeWine is. That is uncool. Let's go ahead and interpret it like Geraldine Ferraro, who said she was Catholic. As a woman, she was non-pro-choice. But as a politician, as an American, she was pro-choice. She didn't feel it was her duty to
impose it.
And honestly, Ron, her saying that was a lot of the reason why I thought she was wonderful, and I cry tears when I hear about this atrocity, which is what I feel it is.
And absolutely, again, 100% agree with you.
I, you know, don't know what else to say. And again, want to say it again, abortion is not a form of birth control. Abortion is not something which should be encouraged in many cases, but it's a difficult decision that has to be made. And as human beings, we make difficult decisions every day. And this law in Texas that is proposed, it's not the law now, it is just being proposed, is that if a woman is raped the day after the rape, she can't take the morning after pill. Or if she finds out she's pregnant a month later, cannot get an abortion. And that's disgusting.
If she did, she'll have the death penalty imposed.
That's disgusting. I don't know how else to say it.
That's a religious dictatorship. We're not a theocracy.
Yeah. I don't believe I'm saying that in 2019, but I guess I am. So,
and unfortunately, our vice president was basically in agreement with that. That's what really scares me if he became president.
Well, that's where a difficult decision may have to be made. Do I support, well, I wouldn't say support, do I choose as the lesser of evils someone like Pence as president, or do I pick someone from the Democratic Party who may seem to favor things like socialism? That also disgusts me. I don't know what to do. I will, like almost every election, pick the lesser of evils. So let's hope for a moderate on either side. I'm all for someone like Biden and Buttigieg. He's certainly very, provides very, very good qualities. Again, highly intelligent. I mean, he's a musician. He speaks more languages than you can count on one hand. He's done great things as the mayor of a nearby city. And he's very well spoken, many things about the guy that I like. And as I said, I can overlook things I don't agree with, like he may or may not support reparations for descendants of slaves. He's also,
I don't think
said,
it's going to happen anyway. Even if they want it, it will never happen. So it's more just, you know, academic discussion.
He also seems to have indicated in his discussions with Pence, as you know, Pence isn't a fan of his sexual orientation, but he's indicated that he's religious, as Pence is, but he manifests his religion in a very different way. And kind of the same thing about Jimmy Carter. All three of those men are religious. Mm-hmm. It's how do they wish to manifest? I can't think of a better word, so I'll just use that overused word. Their beliefs.
Yes. Think of the scenario. Imagine this: that Pete Buttigieg ends up as the running mate of whoever it is. He's vice presidential candidate and has to debate Pence. Can you imagine that debate directly?
That will be one for the Comedy Channel and probably the Springer Show, the Springer Show being canceled, but it might come back because that'll certainly be entertaining.
if it happens.
Definitely would like to be a spot on the wall.
Each other on gay matters.
Yeah, I would like to be a spot on the wall when those two talk. It would certainly be of interest.
Yes.
I also wouldn't mind seeing Chasten, Pete's husband, debate Karen Pence. That would be another interesting one.
But also, Chasten could become the first gentleman instead of Bill Clinton, who would have been if his wife had become president. So we go from Bill Clinton to Chasten. I think that's quite funny in its
but
own way.
Whatever happens, it will be one for the masses. And again, we invite dialogue. Let me know what you think. Every week there's new developments, so we'll just save the next developments for the next show. So as we get ready to say goodbye, Ron, it seems like we always run out of time, but I do want to talk about the other issue, one where I think there's some agreement, but not full agreement between the two of us. Always leave the listener thinking. We discussed that Ohio considered saying that they would give all their electoral votes to the winner of the popular vote in the United States. That was proposed, and it was thankfully shot down. As I think
that's because the Republican Party controls Ohio. If and when we have Democrats, which may never happen, having a more state legislatures, that could happen, enough states that it would happen. But I don't think any Republican legislature will ever agree to that. And right now they control more legislatures, so it's very academic,
right?
The idea that the popular vote winner in the state would be overturned by having who's the popular vote winner nationally. I think it's just an academic debate.
And as I've made
at this point
clear on Facebook, I think that is a ridiculous idea. And I'm not saying that I'm not willing to entertain the idea of scrapping the Electoral College. The problem is inconsistency. We shouldn't give our Ohio's very valuable electoral votes based upon the winner of the popular vote in this country when other states are still using the electoral system. It's inconsistent. To me, it seems doesn't even seem legal. Either one or the other. We use the Electoral College in all states. I know, I believe Nebraska, you would know, Ron, they divide their votes based upon
yes.
proportion of who's
and
won.
And Maine also. Nebraska and Maine can split
right.
their electoral
That's okay. That is
Maybe
different.
Maybe we should
because
do it by splitting by congressional districts. That'd be a way to keep the Electoral College, but have each state not go all to the winner, but go by who won each district. And then the state would go to the one who had more popular votes in the state. That could be an alternative.
I just don't understand the point of voting, the point of pondering which of, you know, is often the case, who is the lesser of two evils and going to the voting booth and casting my ballot for that person. When Ohio just would just go ahead and take the results of the popular vote and just give all the electoral votes to that person. That doesn't, it's not fair, it's not right. It makes our votes next to useless. I don't even think it should be legal. Again, if we're going to scrap the Electoral College, let's do it for all the states. Not just.
I think it could be challenged in federal court and might not go through anyway. But again, as long as there are more Republican legislatures, and right now there are, the Republicans have benefited each time from the popular vote loser winning, and they're not going to go along with it. So only if this country really goes to the point where more states are Democratic could that happen. But then if more states are Democratic, they'll win the electoral vote and the popular vote in any case in that situation.
Right. So we would agree, Ron, that we have partial agreement on this. I think you would agree that if we're willing to entertain the idea of scrapping the Electoral College, but it's all or none. You don't just do it for some of the states. I think we would agree on that. Would that be? Would
yes,
that
or else have a division by congressional districts, and whoever wins the state gets the electoral two-state, you know, Senate votes equivalent. But maybe divide the Electoral College in each state based on congressional districts. That has been talked about before. That might be a good compromise alternative, and it could change the result somewhat, because obviously not every district in Ohio went Republican, and not every district in California went Democratic, as examples. So maybe that would be a good compromise.
But you would agree, Ron, that the idea that only Ohio or maybe some other states, if only Ohio or only some of our states were to do this, it would greatly dilute the value of the votes of the residents of that state. It's all or nothing. Whether or not it would be a good idea to scrap the Electoral College, whether or not it favors the Republicans, that's something we, I would say, agree somewhat on, but you know, maybe no more than about 30 or 40%. But you would agree, Ron, that the fact that if we had some states giving their electoral vote to the popular vote, national popular vote winner, that just wouldn't be fair to the voters, and it would be inconsistent. We need to be all or nothing. Would you agree with me on that?
I would say yes, but again, this compromise of going by congressional district is another alternative where you would not have a winner-take-all. You'd have it by districts, and whoever wins the actual popular vote in the state gets the two equivalents of Senate votes, you know, because the Electoral College is based on all the House districts and the Senate. So the Senate, the two votes would go to the winner of the state, but the congressional districts would be divided, so we'd have to split electoral votes in every state. That might be actually the fairest, but I think that probably would require an amendment, I guess, to do that. And that's the same problem we already have. So I don't think we're going to have a change in the situation anyway, no matter what we might discuss.
Right.
I
so,
think it's
as I said,
the way it is, particularly with Republicans having more state legislatures.
We have partial agreement on that, but we would agree in a general sense that just like a seemingly very different issue, immigration reform and immigration policy, we need to do some adjustments, some reform. As the current system has holes, but I think it is fixable. I think we would probably agree mostly on that. And exactly how we would fix it, well, that's something for a debate for sure.
Hopefully the next term of office will be able to do something on immigration reform, because even George W. Bush wanted it and John McCain wanted it. But obviously, you know, right now the Republicans are now working on that. So it's a big problem.
And we thank again Dr. Ron Fineman for joining us on a finer mid-morning coffee break here on this
thank
Income
Tax
Day.
Thank you so much again for inviting me. Looking forward to next week.
Another great and stimulating discussion. Have a great rest of your day, Ron.
Thank you.